You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, I'm Bob Martin. I'm a co-book writer, co-screenwriter of The Prom.
Hi, I'm Chad Beglin. I'm lyricist and co-screenwriter of The Prom.
Hi, I'm Matthew Sklar, composer of The Prom.
Hi, I'm Adam Anders, producer and executive music producer of The Prom.
Hi, I'm Gordon Cox. I am the contributing theater editor at Variety and the host of Variety's Stagecraft podcast. I wonder if we could talk a bit about some of the songs in detail. Mm-hmm. First of all, I wonder if we could talk about Unruly Heart, which has become sort of an anthem for the, not only the show, but it's also the name of this initiative that two of the stars of the film, Joellen Pellman and Ariana DeBose, launched to direct folks to organizations that support LGBTQ plus youth. Mm. Tell us about what role that song fills in the story and what it means to you. I'm meant to leave.
You know, we wanted it to be a song that the character wrote herself and really was about her experience sort of coming to accept herself. And the idea of an unruly heart came to me and I thought, well, that's kind of interesting. You know, you can't control it. You try and you just keep failing until you realize you should just let it be the best thing about you. And so I don't remember if it was lyrics first or music.
I had the tune first. Yeah. I had the tune first, but I don't know if I had the bridge yet. What I remember is I wrote the tune first, and we had a version of it that we were all pretty happy with, and we did that out of town in Atlanta, and then we had another workshop lab after Atlanta, and Casey said he really likes the song, but something is missing. And he just asked me if I'd come up with a bigger vocal build towards the end. And can you please do it before lunch? I remember that. So I remember running downstairs with Mary Mitchell Campbell, our music supervisor, and just trying to figure it out. And then we felt like we had it. And then we ran upstairs and taught it to everybody. And we presented it to Casey and he was sobbing and everybody in the room was sobbing. We're like, oh, okay, that was a great moment. Mm-hmm. And I'm so glad, you know, he pushed us to do that because it made it better. And that's what makes him a great director. He just keeps pushing you to make it constantly better. Even when you think it's, wait, what's wrong with that? No, he was right. I'm glad we did that final push because I think that final, that a cappella chord when all the kids are singing, it's just so powerful and it makes me emotional every single time I hear it. And to me that song is, you know, very much the heart of the movie and the Broadway show.
Yeah. For me, anytime I see any version of The Prom, either on stage or on film, the song that is on a loop in my head for the following, I don't know, 2 weeks is Tonight Belongs to You. And that number, which
all,
is this
all
kind
eight
of
minutes of it.
Or yeah. I mean, yeah, it goes on and on. But that's such an interesting song in that it is such a sort of lively song and feels like this, you know, feel good empowerment anthem that then gets subverted by the end of it. And I mm-hmm. wonder, tell me a little bit about the creation of that. And then Adam, I feel like that song in particular gave you a lot of leeway in terms of how big you could go in terms of creating a sound and a drive for that piece.
Yeah. I remember it taking a long time to write because there were so many elements and it was quite frankly really cinematic when we were writing it for the stage because it was going to so many different places. And it needed to be a melody, a lyric, and a chord structure that would feel right for Barry and then also right for the kids. And then we needed a section for Mrs. Green And for some reason, I just felt like she should sound like a plucky Tupperware lady. So I just did a kind of a pizzicato strings thing for her. And I remember really enjoying that. And by the way, Kerry Washington sounds amazing doing that. And I had no idea she could sing like that. But it was all really fun to write, but it was a huge puzzle. Working with Chad and me, and then Casey working with Glenn Kelly to figure out what the dance music was. And it's, yeah, I think on stage it's like 7.5 minutes or something like that. But it was a tough nut to crack.
It was also lyrically, I wanted something that would keep changing. So it's Tonight Belongs to You, Tonight Belongs to Me, Tonight Belongs to Us, right. Tonight Belongs to Them, you know, so that it kept the ownership of that prom, kept getting passed around and sort of changing it at each stage.
Right. Yeah. And then Adam, did you have fun with blowing that song up for the screen?
Actually, it was a lot of fun because I love how many movements there are to it and how it keeps changing and switching gears. And, and Kerry was a revelation. I think when she sang that, that's when we started trying to figure out where we can shove her in everywhere else.
Yeah.
And I don't know that I've met an actor that loves to sing more than her, just the sheer joy of singing and how much it means to her. So it meant a lot to us to try and find more things for her to do. But that's a side note. She sounds so good when she comes in there. I love it every time. And I think the biggest transformation from the original to this version is the big, what we call the sad prom or the big prom or the the fake prom. I don't know which prom. There's so many proms.
There's so many proms.
That prom. I call it the mean prom in my head. But
sad prom.
The mean prom. Yeah. No, sad prom is the one.
Sad prom is later. Yes.
Yeah. Now she was screwing me up. Mean prom. Let's go mean with that. Evil prom. That's evil. Yeah. But that needed to just be huge, right? But then it had to feel, which this was one of the things we were able to do that you probably couldn't do because you had like 3 minutes probably in the studio on Broadway. We got to program something for the kids, It's like there's no time. Mm-hmm. Whereas we could do like a full-on EDM, Skrillex or whatever. What does the DJ do who's actually DJing this prom, And what would that sound like for kids today? And that's what we really dug into. And we spent actually probably the most time on that dance break than we did and then building to that final chorus and then finding the sound of that. We recorded that, the group that sings that last chorus at Henson, which is, the We Are the World room in LA, the best choir room in the world. So it just could sound huge.
Yeah.
Again, it's like, with Netflix supporting us, we could do those things. Like, I'm like, this is what I want to do. I hear this in my head. Let's go there. And they're like, okay, which was really fantastic. So it was just fun to just keep building that thing until it's just massive at the end. And then it was never big enough for Ryan, of course. And then on the stage mixing and he's like, it's not big enough. Make it louder. I'm like, my ears are bleeding. Like, how much louder can it be? I mean, I swear he's deaf. He's got to be deaf.
I feel like Tonight Belongs to You is connected to Time to Dance. In my head, I sort of think of Time to Dance as the reprise that actually achieves the thing that we all thought, Tonight Belongs to You actually was, that that closes both the film, before the original music comes in and the show.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think of it that way because It's Time to Dance is even longer than Tonight Belongs to You. Like either two, really. So no, we did not approach it that way. But obviously, it kind of is a reprise for every song in the movie, in a sense. But we thought of it as its own animal when we attacked that one. But I don't know how you guys feel. But
yeah, I mean, it was definitely a response to the Act One finale. But it was also, so much information happens in that song, both in the lyrics and in the little scenettes that happen in it. Mm-hmm. So it's really, we're trying to sum up everybody's story in big thing. So it definitely went through a lot of different versions till we finally landed with this.
Yeah. And for the film, the scenes happen in different places. And I think one of those things was majorly thrown at you at the last second, Adam. I vaguely remember that you were in hell that day, but figured it out beautifully. And I think the flow of it, which is quite different than the Broadway version, really works beautiful on film with Kerry returning, which is a big change. But it's very emotionally satisfying, both musically and dramatically. Mm-hmm. So I was really happy with how that happened. And it was a last minute change from what I remember.
Yeah. There were a lot of last minute changes on that one. One that happened right on set, where I did a massive edit on set.
Yeah, yeah.
which completely threw everything. And the funny thing is the next day I was supposed to fly to London to record the orchestra on all the songs, including that one. So I'd already done the score for it. We'd already done the charts, and now I'm doing this massive edit. And then we realize I'm like on the plane and I get an email that we need to add something else. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, what are we going to do? It was a complete cluster. So then I ended up doing like three different versions of it in London. And then of course, all three of those didn't work once we got an edit in the editorial. So then we still had to redo it again. So it was a really difficult one to figure out. Cause like you said, the scenes kept moving constantly and they required a different score.
Yeah.
So it was just like, they would just kind of lift one section, drop it in the middle of the song somewhere else. I'm like, that doesn't work. It's a musical
train wreck. One of those
It sounds fine. Just put a crossfade on. I'm like, it does not sound fine.
I heard one of those cuts. Yes. It was an upsetting day.
It was horrendous. And I sent an email to Matt. Don't worry. I'm fixing it.
Yes.
I'm
yes. Like, and you did. And you
did. It was not easy, but thanks for noticing.
But in addition to these, you know, great big numbers that do a lot of work and involve basically the entire cast of the film, then you also have these numbers that are sort of real, you know, kind of star turns, and thinking particularly of Meryl Streep and James Corden's for their individual numbers. I wonder if you could tell us about what specifically surprised you and thrilled you about what each of them brought to, you know, Meryl for The Ladies Improving and James for Barry's Going to the Prom.
Well, the first time I heard Meryl sing Ladies Improving, I was just blown away. I had no idea, you know, she had that belt, and she really has it. It was just amazing watching her work. You know, I heard the pre-record, but then watching her shoot it on set, I was there that day, and every single take she does is different, and every single take is brilliant. I mean, she gives the editor so much to do. I don't know how they make their decisions, because it's really remarkable watching her work and work through song. I mean, she's a great interpreter of song. She's really just wonderful. And James, it's an amazing, he's a great singer. And, you know, I love that, you know, I didn't know until I heard it that he was going to pop up the end of going up to the high G on Barry's Going to Prom. And that was just made me very giddy.
Yes, Barry.
That was just so great. But they're both, you know, they're both stars for a reason. They're just consummate performers, talent. Just world class. Yeah.
So, you know, the hardest thing with Meryl was, like you just said, Matt, that every performance is different. So pre-recording her and locking her into something was problematic in a sense, because she hadn't fully visualized the scene yet.
Yeah.
So we had to work through that with her, and I spent a lot of time on that in particular, because she's still creating the performance, right? She's like, well, how can I sing it this way if I end up maybe doing it that way? And it was just kind of that back and forth.
I remember when we were shooting Ladies Improving, she announced to everybody that she's like, I'm going to be re-recording the audio for the first two lines, and I'm going to be performing it. So it's not going to match. Don't worry about it. I know what I'm doing. Something like that.
Except we ended up keeping the original.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, but
you can edit that out, Dory.
We changed something else, but the fact that we gave her that flexibility.
Yeah.
So it was like, you have the freedom, do whatever you want. We will figure it out later.
Right.
And then once we had the edit, then we could look at it and go, that no longer works. And it wasn't necessarily what any of us thought would work or wouldn't work. So she was right. She just misplaced her statement in the song. But it was amazing actually how much just stayed the same.
Thanks for listening. This has been a production of the Broadway Podcast Network in association with Netflix and Sony Masterworks. Be sure to watch The Prom on Netflix and grab the soundtrack everywhere streaming music is found.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. Suf's The Original New Musical from Shana Taub is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Suffs. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Suffs celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Suffs has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com.